You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. All right, folks, we're doing a real quick, spur of the moment podcast here because the new MRIP numbers are out for striped bass. And y'all know we've been waiting a couple years for this. So my crack team of number nerds have been crunching all of this. And I got to tell you, we're not going to have a lot of conclusions because we're not stock assessment scientists yet, but we got a lot to talk about. So we got Cody, Jake, and Mario on here right now. And just, we said that we were going to do this kind of for every podcast. So we can't expect that anyone who listens to this has listened to every episode. And we're going to get into the weeds on some stuff. But the reason why the Marine Recreational Information Program, which we're going to refer to as MRIP, which is the statistical program that estimates how many fish are landed, harvested, released by shore anglers, private boat anglers, you know, million different categories, charter for hire, a whole enchilada. There was a problem with the survey. And it was the order in which the questions were read off in the survey. And they, what they found is if they changed the order of the questions, which were essentially, how many times did you go fishing last year? How many times did you go fishing last month? If they changed the order of those questions, the information changed dramatically. And we have been going through this recalibration for a long time. And the numbers just came out this morning. So we're going to tell you what those numbers are. So Mario, Jake, Cody, without further ado, let's get into it, folks. So from a real
worth a quick preface here, Tony, before Jake and Mario, I mean, Jake's got a lot of stuff. We can kind of tee up some numbers here, but just a preface from a theoretical standpoint is some of this is going to be a big heaping serving of told you so. I mean, I remember personally being in meetings with NOAA staff years and years ago trying to relay that we were well aware that this data was off and that things needed to be realigned. And I remember when all this stuff came out that NOAA decided to acknowledge this and said that, hey, we're going to try to get this figured out. There's kind of like a no shit Sherlock moment. Like we've been saying this and the implications are significant. And so for anyone new or just diving in, this isn't someone just found this under the rug yesterday, August 30th. I mean, this has been in the works for a little bit, but it has pretty significant implications in two capacities. One, to the data that we're going to dive into, I'm sure. And like you said, have more concrete conclusions as time goes on. But it has implications to the data and what that means for, you know, how these fish are managed, right? Abundance and all these different things and directed trips and all these dynamics that go into manage the fishery, right? They're going to change with different levels of significance as this number is recalibrated. But it also has a major role, or I guess I'm trying to figure out the right way to say this, but basically there have been decision makers that knew this was coming. And they have known and have the same intellectual level to understand the capacity of the impact here for years and still been operating in a way as though it wasn't coming. And so I want people to keep that in mind, is this isn't just a, wow, this was just found under the rug yesterday and totally changes how we have to manage fish going forward. This has been in the works, and a lot of the people that have been doing bad things and selfish things when it comes to manage our fisheries knew this was in the works. And that's what makes it worse. So I just wanted to preface that with a little theoretical foundation that this is not some newfound, giant roadblock that we all of a sudden, you know, yes, there's going to be a major road bump with applying this and figuring out its impacts, but people have known about this for a long time. And so those who are managing and acting as though they're shocked now, just keep in mind, friends and colleagues, many have known for a long time. I just wanted to get that on the foundational side of this thing.
Yeah, it's important to note because it was funny to me that this came out the next day, the next business day after the Stripe Bass stock assessment subcommittee workshop ended.
Very convenient. So, convenient, yeah. Timing.
I wish we had this last week, but it would have made their lives even more difficult.
You mean the people who are supposed to be crunching these numbers for Stripe Bass, who have been acknowledging over multiple meetings over the last couple of years that all the numbers are going to change and they were not aware it was going to change the next day? Color me shocked, Jake, but continue.
Yeah, so there's a lot here. It's a big deal. I'm not sure exactly where to start, but we should also add that they knew it was coming and they knew what the numbers were going to be. And they said, oh, roughly 40%. And what we see for striped bass is that it is one of the more severely impacted species. So other species will not be affected as much. And striped bass is one of the ones that's affected the most. So yeah, I was starting with directed trips. They've had one of the deeper cuts, so that effort has declined. The effort declined when there was more effort more severely than it did in recent years when there was less effort. So what we see in the peaks is that the recent time series has been flattened out. So when effort was through the roof in the 2000s, through 2010, we now see a rise in effort to the mid-2000s, and then it flattens out and starts to decline more recently again.
All right, I'm going to be your everyday man translator. When they were saying the numbers were really big, that's when it was the most off.
Correct. And we won't get into the weeds on that yet, but the flip side of that is when effort was really low, that's when it was also most off. So when we get to harvest and releases, you'll see that a lot of that comes from wave six. So that's prime New York, New Jersey harvest time, all the way down into the Chesapeake. So where there was less effort, they made a big mistake. And when there was the most effort, they made a big mistake.
Hey, Jake, let's get the share up really quick. Again, it kind of fell off. So just to show like the magnitude of how far they were off on total harvest. So
I just swapped us from directed trips to harvest for anyone listening.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm the substitute teacher who's messing up the classroom right now, but I can go.
Why
right
you got to do this to us, Cody? I mean, we're hanging on by a thread as it is.
Too many charts, too many tables.
So many charts. Jake's the only one that's excited. He's the chart guy.
I've been
Mario's mildly excited, but he didn't have enough time to review all of this yet.
This I've is my favorite game. It's called Messing with Boomers. Here you go.
So, dude, me and you got a problem. I'm a Gen Xer, man. So, like, you stop it. I'm the one who was abused by those people the most. So, shut it.
The charts are in the keyboard. Continue.
So, to show you, just as an example, the chart that we made really quickly, directed striped bass trips peaked somewhere, you know, between 2005 and 2010, well in excess of 25 million trips. And the revised number has them hovering right at 15 million to a little bit over 15 million. So you're talking, you know, 26, 27, 28 million directed trips down to 15 to mostly 15 million. In 2006, it peaked, and there may have been 17 million trips. And it's this, it holds true. If you go back to 1995, you know, you're looking at 15 million pre-revision and under 10 million post-revision. So this is substantial. I mean, you're talking well in excess of 40% that they were overestimating us. So no, okay, we're not going to play that game, whatever it was. I think it was in The Office, jump to conclusions or whatever. Or maybe it was in Seinfeld. I don't remember, but somebody made a ridiculous board game called Jump to. We're not jumping to conclusions and saying, hey, there's 40% more striped bass out there. That's not what this means. But it does have enormous impacts. And I think what we're going to see when the next chart that we made is the harvest chart. And this is kind of where the rubber meets the road with
chart
all
swap.
Of this.
Stay with me.
Chart
do,
swap.
Do, 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 do. If I keep going, we're going to get sued.
I was going to say we may have to, we're probably going to have to pay royalties on that. Thanks a lot, buddy. So total harvest, A plus B1, numbers of fish. If you're looking at, again, that time series from 2005 to 2010, that's where it's the most substantial, 6 million fish harvested in the pre-revision, under around 3 million harvested when it's revised. So, I mean, you're actually looking at substantially over. Plus, say, let's just look at the chart. Let's say it's around 5.5 million to about 3 million. So you're looking at well in excess of 40%. And as you move the time frame, like to more modern times, 2020 to 2025, you know, I'm looking at a peak around 2021, 2022, where pre-revision was probably 3.2, 3.3 million. And the revised number is probably around 2.1 million. So more in like the 30% overestimation range. And you know, total harvest, we are down to like the revised version for 2025. We are down to slightly over a million fish.
Can I make another layman's turns observation? I'm going to be the soft brain for this conversation, but look at the left side of this line, Tony, back around the early 1980s. Okay. And look at the right side. That blue line, the revised line, 2025. Isn't it kind of scary how they're getting pretty darn close to each other? I mean, it should scare us that we're looking at total harvest and looking back at, you know, moratorium era, post-moratorium era, and looking what we're trending towards. And it should scare us that those lines are doing a, you know, a sine curve where they're going to go up and they're coming right back down to baseline. It's really concerning.
Oh, maker of charts. Oh, super science. Dude, I think we have to make Mario like turn off his PC and walk back, because I'm looking at him right now and it's like dog with bone. Right?
It's like a point of view if you put a GoPro in a dog's food bowl.
Yeah, where that the dog right chases the tennis ball and he's got the GoPro, like the RC cars with the German Shepherds, man. That's what and the German Shepherds have the goggles on. That's kind of what Mario looks like right now. So I don't know, Jake and Mario, what's your read on this?
You know, initially looking at the data and looking at these figures, going back to the directed trips figure that we discussed first, one thing that I saw was that there, you know, the revised data showed that there was, you know, more annual variation from, was it 2010 to the current timeline, and that the pre-revision data showed those really high peaks and low valleys where there was more drastic changes, and it showed a much more abrupt increase in directed trips compared to what was actually occurring, which we now see in the revised data. And that kind of corresponds to what we're seeing in the revised data for total harvest now as well, where you see from that 1995 time period to 2005, 2010 range, there was a really hard increase. I mean, it's really an exponential increase in total harvest numbers, where 1995 was around a million harvest, And it went all the way up to 2010, which was north of 5 million harvests, closing in around 6 million harvests. And it just drops off of a cliff. And so we see kind of a similar trend in the revised data, but at a much lower value for each year, to where the peak of the revised data for that 2010 was around 3 million compared to what they previously assumed, which was north of 5 million total harvested fish. So, but what stands out to me looking at this data and looking how the figure portrays it is that you go from this kind of 15-year period from 2000 to 2015, where you see kind of your standard, what you'd expect annual variation of total harvest, which could be influenced from things like population dynamics and environmental drivers that could influence, and also the human dimensions aspects of it all that could drive those variation in harvest numbers. But then you start to see that decline from 2015 to 2020, and you see a slight peak around 2021, 2022, but then it drops right back off in the following years, and you see that downward trend. So what this tells me is that they overestimated directed trips, they overestimated total harvest. Okay, so in reality, directed trips and total harvests are much lower than what they previously estimated. But what I really want to pay attention to is the fact that we're not seeing the kind of ebbs and flows of annual variation how we saw in the past. We're starting to see more of a trending decline in directed trips and total harvests, which aligns with what we've been seeing in previous podcasts where, hey, the age structure of the population is deteriorating. Anglers are anecdotally seeing less and less, you know, slot size fish and smaller size fish compared to those quote unquote trophy size fish. And so through those years of virtually zero recruitment and failed spawns, we can start to infer that people will become unsatisfied with the fishery, and directed trips will go down, and thus total harvest will also go down through lower directed trips and also a lower availability of the resource as well. So with this revised data, we're seeing that there's lower harvest levels, lower discard, lower directed trip data, and that they're both trending downward over the last 10 years or so, like we've been seeing this whole time.
Look, at the risk, I am now the German Shepherd with the goggles on chasing the RC car. And Cody wants to say something, but there's lawn equipment in his front yard. Everyone give Cody a break. So we're just going to wait. We're going to wait for that. We're going to put a pin in what Cody wanted to say. But when I'm looking at total harvest, and right now we are down to, let's say, 1.3 million. At the risk of my computer throwing a complete hissy fit and stopping working during a podcast, I decided to go to the FMP update. And I was just, you know, just happened to fall on the chart for commercial harvest. Unfortunately, that's in numbers of fish. And of course they do. Here we go. In pounds, total pounds was 1.65 million. 1.65 million. And our harvest was, Cody pulled the damn chart down, whatever I said 30 seconds ago, around 1.3 million. 10% my ass. And then you have the 0.5% commercial discards, which is being revised. And then you have our catch and release mortality, which is half of what they thought it was. You are not 10% of harvest anymore, folks, because I'm looking at the 2025 FMP update and A plus B1 total harvest. That's not total mortality. You have greater total harvest than we do.
They've been behind that 10%. you know, that they're just a small portion of the pie and leave us alone and we feed the community and how dare you offend the working man? You're just a bunch of spoiled elitist sport fishermen and all the bullshit that we've heard for the last decade. And the reality is we actually played real nice off the jump because the numbers were pointing towards us before all this recalibration. So we didn't even rip them a new one in that capacity. As an organization, Tony, we weren't anti-commercial off the jump and gunning for theirs and saying, give it back to the wreck anglers, even though our economy...
All we ever said was we have to fix our own house first. That's exactly all we ever said.
And we've done that. We've now to the point of there's no fixing left other than shutting it all down. And then you get to this point and all of a sudden you go full circle and you go, oh, look at that. They actually weren't the small piece of the pie. And get ready, because as we start ripping, rightly so, ripping into this, when all of this is figured out and conclusions are quote unquote more concrete, get ready, because they're going to be whining and crying and we're going to see the same old things. I don't understand why for commercial fishermen who are supposed to be rough and tumble, you know, yellow raincoat, old man in the sea, you know, seasons away from their wife working in the ocean's most treacherous conditions. Why are they so soft? And why do they particularly flock to Facebook? These are questions I don't have. I am more concerned about the second one. But like, we posted something about hatcheries and redfish, and a commercial fisherman in North Carolina got offended by it and said, leave us commercial anglers alone. I mean,
just to put a point on the hypocrisy of that, there is no commercial fishery for redfish in Louisiana.
Yes, I pointed that out in our reply. So this literally has nothing to do with you, but so, thanks for joining in and getting offended.
Yeah, so like you're yelling at us saying we're attacking you and there's not even
a fishery.
It's not
a conversation about and you. It's just, so it's, that's where it's all this is going, Tony.
Yeah.
Time to rip into this bullshit commercial dynamic now that the data supports exactly what many have assumed, but you know what they say about assumptions? Assumptions make an ass out of you and me. Well, now the data shows where the ass really was.
So Jake, as you are, Jake is staring at the ceiling right now. So we're going to, please continue, Jake.
No, I was going to say there's definitely a correlation between the commercial fishermen's activity on Facebook and what commercial fishing advocates call the graying of the commercial fishing fleet. But similar to what we said about the number of trips, the total harvest relationship between recreational and commercial changes based on the number of trips and how healthy the fishery is. Because I didn't have time to pull up the full time series, but from that FMP, we see on pre-revision, commercial harvest as a share of total striped bass harvest, they assumed was 30% at the beginning of the time series. That's 1998, I think, from the FMP. Now, with the revised version, we see instead of 30% of total striped bass harvest, commercial harvest is almost 50% in 1998. And that's come down, but are they going to be held to account for their share of harvest? I doubt we're going to see any quota paybacks there. They set it as a percentage of total harvest. And
I don't expect paybacks from people who didn't want to give it up in the first place.
When throughout the 2000s, when they said commercial is only 20% of harvest, oh, well, actually it was closer to 30. And even though it might not be as severe in recent numbers, it adds up for who has done the most damage to this fishery.
I kind of want to follow that up right here, because while we're still kind of early on discussing all of these revisions and contrasting the revisions to the pre-revised data, I want to make the point that This is the MRIP data. This is the fishery dependent data that is used to help assess and manage this population. Okay. Management is based on making choices. And so you can't make choices in fisheries without making some kind of predictions. Okay. And so that's why you hear us talking about models all the time, is because these statistical models help us better understand what's happening with these biological populations. Okay.
Well,
and
Mario,
so the reason
that we didn't explain something. So this chart that we have up includes B1s, and B1s are fish that were released and died. So this is not just, because it's going to come up where they're going to be like, yeah, well, those catch and release angles kill everything. Well, this is the revised number that includes A plus B1. So there's not another 50% out there. And I would just like to add that this number does not include what is going to be a 9% to 4.whatever% applied to release mortality. It doesn't include that. Jake, I can see the whites of Jake's eyes. So he wants to say something, but like, I just wanted to, before you really dive into it, that's the clarity that I wanted to give people. We're not hiding anything. Yeah. We're not hiding any sources of mortality here.
No, yeah. Jake, and I'm
Jake, take yourself off of mute. There we go.
Well, I was going to see if Cody wanted to pull up the release chart, because we see a similar pattern there, where in the years where there were the highest releases, we've seen a greater reduction in those releases. So again, it's flattened and almost compressed the actual number of trips, harvest, and releases into more modern years, where we see that big spike in 2004, 2005. That's now come down, but the trend really hasn't changed, where we're now below 10 million releases, and we've only been there once since 1995. So again,
say that again, because boy, does that hit.
Yeah, we see this spike, and then a little dip, and then it crashes hard.
To the last time.
Over the last 3 years.
The entire coastwide recreational fishing community has released under 10 million striped bass in a year was when we came out of the moratorium in 1995.
Yeah, there's one dip around 2010, but the rest are well above 10 million, peaking close to 30 million in the early 2000s and pretty much from 2015 to 2020.
So again, when you look at those releases and you say, okay, we released 10 million fish, up 9%, that's over 1 million dead discards. Nope. 4.whatever%. It's not 9%. Those days are over. So when you look, I guess when I'm looking at that A plus B1, which is harvest plus release mortality, that is our total contribution to mortality. Horrifying how high the commercial sector is now into it.
Well, thankfully, we know that all the release fish from the commercial operations don't die, right? They have like a 2% release mortality.
I mean, this
commercial
discards me.
So I feel safe knowing that the commercial anglers are so thoughtfully handling these fish, kissing them, hugging them, checking their 401ks, giving them a nice meal and sending them on their way. I mean, really, really good. And this is all sarcasm for anyone who has not yet listened to the episode where Jake uncovered that the discard mortality rate's like being used at like, what was it, 2%? Right? It's like the lowest out of
point.
No,
it was 0.5.
Oh, sorry.
Silly.
My bad.
You silly, silly person.
My bad for overestimating. Yes. So basically, if you're caught by a commercial angler, you cannot die. You are the Schwarzenegger of striped bass, according to data. But that's its own episode. You can scroll back a couple to find that.
Yeah, they're invincible to gillnets. And going back to where you started us off here, I wonder why they tried to sneak in a no target closure before all this information came out.
oh boy, did Jake just wind me up on purpose? You know, like, so y'all listen to what Jake just said. Okay. Years of our lives before Jake and Mario came on board with the association. Not only did we spend defending no targeting closures, but we also took a lot of pressure from other people, like, let's just say in our orbit, that were like, hey, you know, this was all like leverage. This is kind of the dark, dirty stuff that, oh, well, we need to lower the reference points. If we lower the reference points, that solves all the problems, because then catch and release mortality isn't as big of a deal. And harvest isn't as big of a deal, and we don't have to keep as many fish in the water. And I think what y'all don't understand is we held our ground on both those issues. We were like, absolutely not. Future generations deserve to see striped bass the way that we used to see them. That's number one. And number two, we are going to fight to the last man on no targeting closures, because they're unenforceable. They don't work. And basically, it's just a number game where you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. They weren't saying, well, we're going to take all these, you know, real harvest reductions. And no, what they were saying is, if we can save X amount of fish on paper with this no targeting that's unenforceable, and the law enforcement already said they're not even going to write tickets for it, if we can take all of that, then we can keep up this unsustainable harvest. And the thing, when we're looking at these numbers, the thing to think about is these people had better information than we did. The people who were pushing no target, they knew what the preliminary findings were. They knew that Micah Dean was doing this incredible work on catch and release mortality. And they threw everything, their disgusting, soulless hearts could throw at this, so they could keep killing fish when they knew it was the worst thing to do. Blame it on us. Totally blame it on us. And just kill them until there weren't enough people even fishing worried about killing fish anymore. Because that's what was happening. And I want y'all to know, in the great history of striped bass, we beat them back. We didn't give in on the reference points. We didn't give in on no targeting. We gave them nothing. And the win was getting it off the table. So when you heard just utterly disgusting humans on the Striped Bass Management Board from New Jersey, from Delaware, from some of the other states thinking that this was a good idea, they knew this was coming, and they ran out of time, and there should be some level of accountability for what they did to the striped bass stock, for what they did to the striped bass community. People had the audacity to say that we were the ones dividing the community, which is like the equivalent of like a little toddler pointing to their older brother or sister saying they ate the Oreos and they have Oreo crumbs all over their face. And the parent kind of chuckles because it's cute. It wasn't cute. You were going to destroy an entire industry for your own pathetic, selfish wants. And you saw this stuff before we did. And we know you did. The fisheries director saw this information like 2 weeks ago. We saw it this morning, and we're telling you about it. The Striped Bass Stock Assessment Work Group, I mean, it's just like we said in the beginning, it's kind of crazy that these numbers come out the Monday after a week-long work group closes. So don't think that, like, people didn't know the preliminary numbers and which way the wind was blowing. Don't think that those conversations weren't had, and not a single person got up at one of those striped bass management board meetings and was like, you know, we got to stop talking about this mess because all this is going to change profoundly, and we need to manage these fish on the new information that we have. And this has to end right now. And you can't make decisions about what the new reference points should be. If no targeting closures don't work, who gets what slice of the pie when something this profound is happening? And the thing that upsets me the most is they knew. Look, it's just like the stock assessment. We're in every one of these calls. We're basically abusing ourselves, our brain, our ability to even function, spending a week in these calls. And the reason why we're doing it is because we will know before everyone else kind of sort of what the stock assessment is going to say. Because we were in the meetings where they made all the decisions. And while we're not stock assessment scientists, we will know enough to say, hey, this looks really bad, or it's not as bad as we thought. That's what participating in the process gets you. So no one on earth can tell me that they didn't know what this was going to be. And I want the chart makers and the chart lovers on this podcast to now take over. But I just wanted to point that out because Jake brought up the no targeting closures. Any comments on no targeting closures or any comments on these charts, guys? Take it away.
Yeah, this another thing we haven't dug into yet. So again, these are just preliminary takes here, is for higher share of that harvest A plus B1, we'll just call it immediate fishing mortality. Even though for higher, a very small percentage of the trips, I haven't checked how that will change yet, but just looking at that harvest fishing mortality, we see that their share is doubled for a lot of years, especially when fishing was good back in the 90s and 2000s. So to give you some of those numbers, we'll just start in the 2000s. For higher share, pre-revision was 11% in 2025, and it's now 20%. So you go through the list, and some years it's more or less than others, but for higher's share of that harvest and dead discard mortality is pretty much doubled. And in recent years, it's at least 25 to 30% higher than it was. So I wonder why they wanted that no target closure.
Yeah, Jake, I'm going to circle back to kind of what I was prefacing there is, you know, we're throwing around this information, and how I want the listeners to think about this and how it relates directly to management of striped bass is, like I said, management's based on choices. Choices have to be made based on having a decent understanding of predictions of, you know, what management action will do to the future of the stock, right? And so with this fishery dependent data from MRIP and seeing how off the mark the pre-revised data was and has been, and that's what they've been using, the fact that, you know, this revised data shows a much different story compared to the data they've been using is going to have massive implications on how they assess the striped bass population and the future management action.
Mario, can you drill down on the massive implications? Because this is going to change the reference points just by proxy. That's the level of massive. So I guess why I'm bringing it up is, like, why would any group be working on changing the reference points now when they're going to be catastrophically altered based on this?
Yeah, right. Because it's you know, the new data shows a different story of what's actually been occurring to the physical population than what they've assumed based on the unrevised data. So everything that they have been talking about in the management of the striped bass, it's, you know, they're going to have to rethink things to incorporate this new data because the old data is so skewed, right? It gives us a completely skewed understanding of what is actually occurring to the, you know, among the physical population, right? And how the recreational fishery interacts with it. So this is going to alter our understanding of abundance, recruitment indices. It's pretty much, you know, the entire assessment framework of understanding this population is going to be altered based on how significant the new revised data is. And that's going to completely shift how striped bass are going to be managed moving forward because they were so off the mark.
Yeah, that was one of the things we saw last week just for the stock assessment was that MRIP was one of the more influential inputs to the model. So,
right. If you have bad estimates, that's going to give you skewed model outputs, and that's going to skew and bias your inference that you get from the model outputs, right? Which thus that will skew and bias reference points. So if you don't incorporate this appropriately, you're going to have reference points that are used to manage the population that are way off the mark. So this is very significant in the future management of this population because this completely sets forth, you know, the assumptions and how they're going to be managed.
And the funniest part of all this, the ones who are going to eat crow on this the most are the ones who, throughout every management opportunity, addendums, and every chance to alter regulations, the commercial guys, 24/7, ripping into, we're the smallest part of the pie, the data's all wrong, there's more striped bass out there than there's ever been, yada, yada. Hey, guess what, guys? You were right. The data was all wrong.
Boy, did they eat shit on that.
The data was all wrong, and it's all wrong, and not in your favor. So get ready to eat it, because for years, you said the data's all wrong, leave you the heck alone, and we're now finding that the data's all wrong, and you should have been the one in focus the entire time.
Yeah. And you look at that sharp decline in releases, right, over the last 5 years or so. And so you factor in the fact that release mortality has been assumed to have a 9% catch and release mortality rate, but we know that it's realistically about 4%. The contribution of release mortality from the recreational anglers is going to plummet even more so.
It's, Mario, I just did it on the old calculimulator. It's over 400,000 fish.
Yeah.
So if I'm looking at the 2025 numbers and we're under 10 million, it's over 400,000 fish that are no longer going to be attributed to us. And that means that if you go back to the A plus B one chart, you know, the total removals, you will remove somewhere just under 500,000 fish from us. And that is why I'm saying that, you know, the removals for commercials, again, on the Striper FMP, in pounds, they were 1.65 in numbers of fish. Oh God, man, they don't make this easy, do they? I mean, they're with the commercial discard number being changed. I mean, they're probably around 700,000 now fish. So when you remove 400,000 fish from us, you add the commercial discard that is not going to be 0.5% anymore. You take a guess and say, you know, that's a conservative guess going from 565,000 total fish removed by the commercial sector in numbers of fish, not weight. And then you add those commercial discards, which, I mean, if it's 20%, which that's the bare minimum that I would even begin to accept, That's pretty close to 700,000 fish. And that is where they will now be. I don't have the chart in front of me, but they will be a massive contributor, probably getting close to 50% in numbers of fish and removals of the fishery. It ain't 10%. We always knew it wasn't 10%, but we're a science-based association, and we were talking on what the best available science was at the time many years ago. And then, lest we forget, that the vast majority of numbers of fish of removals is in the Chesapeake Bay, where we've had 7 years of spawning failure. And we're supposed to trying to be add to the SSB with the few fish that we have. None of this makes a lot of sense, guys. So does anything that I say line up? Did I explain that well? Like, what are, you know?
Yeah. I mean, also, so this is what, 2023 was the emergency action, Tony? Am I correct in that? Trust my tapped out brain right here. But if I remember
close
correctly,
enough, that's for government work.
Yes, I'm pretty sure 2023 was emergency action where the ocean wreck slot was, you know, shrunk. And there was a 0% commercial reduction during that emergency action. And then you have addendum in 2024 where there was significantly more impact on wreck than commercial again. I mean, you have all these critical moments. And then if you overlaid, that would be a fun thing, my fellow graph nerds here, but that would be a fun thing to kind of put some of those management points on these graphs to look at, okay, look what was actually being decided on, and then look what was actually going on with the wreck fishery. And you'd see these moments where wreck impact is just tanking because the wreck fishery is tanking because there's no fish to catch and no one's going fishing anymore. And at the same time, we know what's going on with commercial. And people should be rightfully pissed off, right? Because we've been asking people, play by the rules, be science-driven, be thoughtful, be nuanced. And some people have been looking around and observing what they see going on with the fishery and had the inferences that the situation was a lot closer to what this shows, but didn't have the data to do so or to back up their opinions to do so. Well, now they do, and they should rightfully be pissed off. Because with all the stuff wreck have done and all the sacrifices they've done and our really thoughtful anglers who are out there who are like, man, I'm being told 9% of everything I put back's done. I'm crimping barbs. I'm looking at mass DMS research. I'm putting hook setups on my plugs to match the best available thing to make sure that, you know, my fish survive. Some of these people aren't even going fishing. And Tony, it's going to have to be a whole separate episode. But have we taken a little peek at ASA's their 2026 special report on fishing and fishing in general? Because if I remember correctly, I don't have it in front of me right now, this was the first year participation went down, and this is not just across striped bass, but what were the major reasons why people quit fishing in that? Boring, weren't catching anything. And what ruined their trips? If I remember correctly, it was crowded fishing spots and not catching enough fish. So suddenly you're starting to paint this bigger picture where for the wreck angler, the situation's getting shittier and shittier. They're asked to give back more. They're asked to polish their participation as much as possible. Meanwhile, in striped bass specifically, commercial anglers are pounding a new one to the fishery and whining and crying and saying, it's not us and we feed the community. Newsflash, I am all for the ocean and or land-based aquaculture for feeding the community. We have a lot of humans we got to feed. The cheapest way to do so is not chasing wild-caught striped bass. I'm sorry. Well, it's not. So this is just getting worse and worse for the recreational angler.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. More betterer. I had someone say that to me on a basketball court recently. Nice, that was more betterer. but this is getting worse for the rec angler, and the commercial angler, in striped bass specifically, has been sitting on the sideline. Meanwhile, we're watching these trends that the data now supports or supports even to more significant capacity, that this experience is getting worse. There's no reason to go. We go less. We catch less. Things have never been this bad. And the jackasses on the sidelines saying, leave us alone and it's not us and let us kill whatever we want because I want to pay my bills. Newsflash, no one gives a shit about your bills anymore. Sorry. No one gives a shit.
On those management actions, I love it. I mean, I laugh my ass off whenever I hear someone say, oh, well, nobody's fishing because you can't keep the fish. You changed our size limits. The slot's too small. Nobody wants to go fishing. The interesting thing with this MRIP update is it doesn't change the fact that 9 out of 10 striped bass ever caught have been released.
Nor does it change the fact as we shrunk that slot, Jake, we also pushed the largest remaining year class in striped bass in like the last 12 something years through that slot. So quite literally, when everyone was complaining about the slot, was when we funneled the most amount of fish possible into that slot. But continue.
That's all I was going to add, because we see certain people who are going to say, MRIP bad, don't do anything about it. And if this swung in their direction, they would say, we don't need the slot anymore. And it's just those kinds of perspectives are completely detached from the reality of the fishery.
No, just think about a father growing up with a son in Massachusetts right now. Wants to take his son fishing. Goes to, you know, the local tackle shop. Stuff's expensive already. Spends his money. Gets geared up. Goes down to all the easily accessible community holes, the docks, the piers, the jetties, the beaches, the places that striped bass should be easily accessible for when seasonally appropriate. There's no small fish to keep the kid engaged. There's no small fish to get the kid hooked on fishing. There's really, even if they wanted to keep something for the table, there's not a lot of fish to target to keep for the table, right? They have this user experience. And if they're any sort of at all involved in conservation or watching what's playing out with striped bass management, there's a bunch of boats a few miles offshore of them right now, just pounding the living hell out of the remaining big fish and harvesting them for commercial purposes. And those commercial anglers are the same ones that told you they are not a part of the problem. Leave them alone. So while everyone's in the shrunk slot, those big fish are just getting leveled. And I know seasons have closed and stuff like that, but I'm talking about the dynamic here is just so drastically shifted from the seesaw of what they claimed versus what actually is, now that the seesaw has gone down to the other side and this has been recalibrated.
Can I just add one thing there?
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't matter if you look at the commercial share of total striped bass harvest by the numbers of fish or the weight of the fish, because both of them are going to be, I'm not going to put a number on it, both of them are a much higher share of total mortality, because in the Chesapeake Bay, they're harvesting those 3-pound fish, and places like Massachusetts, they're harvesting those biggest fish. So it cuts both ways, whether you look at it from the numbers of fish, you look at all this MRIP information by the numbers of fish removed from the population, or the weight of the spawning stock biomass removed from the population.
Well, so, oh man, I mean, you don't talk about a lot to pull apart. Mario, if you want to kind of step in from a science perspective, you know, if y'all came in and saw this on redfish, if this was a situation going on in Louisiana and you were still at the university and this came in on redfish, something this profound, and there was a commercial fishery for redfish, you know, it's just, you know, just put your shoes on, put your hat on rather, for, you know, what would you advise LDWF? If this came down in Louisiana with the relationships you have at LDWF, and they were like, Mario, what should we do?
This is the case in point reason we don't have a commercial fishery for redfish in Louisiana. So I'll leave it at that. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make sense. We've discussed this in prior discussions where we know that, you know, this particular fishery is intercepting, you know, they're intercepting, you know, fecund females that are trying to make it to their spawning areas. They're, you know, they're taking these, realistically, they're taking much more fish than what was historically assumed. You know, we see the overall trend of the striped bass fishery itself over the last decade. We know that the fishery itself is going through adverse times right now, where it's struggling to get any recruitment of juvenile fish. The mature females are struggling to have any sort of successful spawning, any sort of spawning years going successfully. So it's like, it's just, I don't see, and now we're seeing the fact that, you know, the commercial share of striped bass harvest was underestimated. And we obviously know that the commercial discard estimate is grossly underestimated. The commercial discard mortality estimate is grossly underestimated, because we're making a big fuss of 9% to 4% for recreational release mortality estimates. And then you want to talk about, you know, a 0.5% discard mortality estimate. And you're seeing, obviously, that's not in any world, that's not true. And you're also seeing that their share of striped bass harvest was underestimated. I just don't see a world in where it's not feasible to address the impact that the commercial fishery has on the striped bass population. And that's where accountability has to come in and say, look, I get that you have responsibilities of your own. You know, this is your job, may have been your dad's job, your grandfather's job. You may be a legacy worker in this field, but at the end of the day, your work has an impact on the physical population. And we see that it realistically has a much greater impact than has previously been assumed. And so it's time that it's addressed, because the microscope has been on the recreational fishery. We've saw several media posts this week that said one of the worst things you could do for striped bass is release them, because they're all going to die. I mean, think about how misleading and disservicing that is to recreational anglers and to the what they assume their impact on the fishery is, and especially when considering that the striped bass fishery is primarily a catch and release fishery in itself. So, you know, we're just like, do we really need to be commercially harvesting the amount of fish that has been done so historically, in making recreational fishermen continue to take cuts and talk about no targeting closures?
I mean, it's pretty wild when you think about it, when you look at everything that's going on, you know, the chart that we're looking at right now, commercial share of total striped bass harvest has them at 32%. But if you, in 2025, if you slap on another couple hundred thousand fish for commercial discards and us not killing as many fish via release, which is proven by science, you're going to see that number. We're not, you know, there aren't a lot of stripers left. We're not harvesting a lot on either side. So when you have that kind of tectonic shift, let's say it's 500,000 fish, it's going to be more. Say it's 550,000, 600,000. That is enormous. So that, if anyone clips any of this, that 32% number is without the benefit of those two things, because we're trying to be intellectually honest with everything that's going on and what we know today right now. So you can probably consider that number changing substantially as those two tidbits of information filter their way through the stock assessment process. Jake or Mario, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I want to kind of throw that in. You know, we obviously seen that harvests have declined from both sectors because there's not a lot of remaining fish, but I want you to think about this in a way. So when a population declines, you're typically, there'll still be areas that see, you know, decent size aggregations of fish, but that doesn't imply that the population is fine. That's simply saying that that smaller part of the population is used in a certain area. And so it's not a good representation of the population itself. So knowing that the Chesapeake is a prolific driver of the Atlantic striped bass stock, and knowing that the commercial fishery operates in the Chesapeake Bay, we can assume that they will still have a prominent share of striped bass harvests, even with the declining population, because of the interaction of that Atlantic striped bass population and the Chesapeake Bay system itself. So as we see a decline in abundance of Atlantic striped bass coast-wide, there will still be pockets of relative abundance of those striped bass that are used in the Chesapeake Bay that are susceptible to widespread harvest by the commercial fishery. So even though, you know, overall harvest is declining coast-wide, we can still see localized areas of high-frequency harvest by the commercial sector within the Chesapeake Bay, which would therefore limit the Chesapeake Bay's capacity to further support that Atlantic striped bass population through processes like supporting recruitment and supporting the spawning processes by those females that enter the Chesapeake Bay to enter those riverine systems. So that's what I'm trying to say, is that the commercial sector that's operating within that bay still have a large effect on that striped bass population, even though their harvests are declining substantially, because the remaining Atlantic striped bass still use that bay a substantial amount to support their life processes. So they could see those kind of localized aggregations, even though the general consensus and assessment of the abundance of striped bass along the coast is declining, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, because you can see how, or you can hear how some of the people on the stock assessment subcommittee think about how these changes are going to play into their abundance and SSB projections and everything else. But we heard them say that the new catch and release mortality rate is going to be the single biggest, most important change in the entire stock assessment, because it's going to change that proportion of commercial to recreational mortality a lot. So we could clip that, but allegedly I did not record it.
Well, my question,
for note-taking purposes,
I don't know if it's going to be as substantial as what I'm looking at here, Jake.
No, that's, thank you. That was my main point. I forgot. You put these two together and the entire picture changes. Not only are we releasing fewer fish, just on the whole, we're still releasing a larger proportion than we have in the past, but yeah, you laid out the numbers earlier.
This is what I want you to think.
Frustrating that they knew this, and they knew this was coming.
Jake, to follow that up, and I want to get all of your thoughts on this. You know, you think about this in a way where we see that recreational releases has plummeted. We know that the recreational release mortality is significantly less, from 9% to realistically what it is at 4%. Okay, so we see that the recreational sector's direct effect on striped bass mortality is much lower than ever, compared to seeing what we're now seeing, where the commercial share is higher than it ever was estimated. And we know realistically that their discord mortality rate is way higher than 0.5%. I mean, that paints a picture that just completely flip-flops everything that was ever assumed. We're saying, hey, recreational guys are contributing to way less striped bass mortality through direct harvests and release mortality. And obviously the commercial guys, like, we see it in the data right here. We know that their discard mortality is not 0.5. We know it's something that is leaps and bounds greater than that. And then you also see that they attribute to a larger percentage of the share of total striped bass harvests. I mean, how do you argue that?
Well, Mario, not only that, but this is not conjecture. We know, based on all the calls that we've been on, that there are and Jake, correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I'm going off of memory. I don't have the chart in front of me. There's somewhere in the neighborhood in excess of 400,000 tags missing for striped bass. We also know that the reporting requirements, I mean, it vary wildly across different states. So we know that. And we also know that striped bass appear on the market with tags that are well in excess of a year old in them. So we know that there's a lot of funny, we know that from New York, that they went to restaurants and they were serving striped bass that had no tag associated with them. So you start adding all, yet do recreational fishermen poach? Yes. And we would love, we advocate for them to have harsher penalties all the time for poaching. We hate that. That is the worst part of our sector, right? We fight these things. We fight for better science. We fought for the data that came out of the Mass DMF study to change your hook configurations, the lures that you're using, handling time, everything. Everything. We have supported cleaning up our house, as Cody and I discussed. And now it's like our house isn't the only one that has to be cleaned up. And this is insane to me, again, because 80% of the numbers of commercially caught fish are coming out of the Chesapeake, and there are not a lot of fish in the Chesapeake right now. There's not a lot of stripers, man. And it's anyone who says it's just as good as it was 20 years ago was not fishing 20 years ago. There are vast areas of the Chesapeake that is like a wasteland right now. And you can see that in the numbers of fish that are being released. You can see that in the effort. You can see that in the harvest. You see it across every metric. This is true. And if we're having a problem with spawning, which we clearly are, how are we letting this? This isn't like, gee, maybe we should address this. Like, the question is now, how are we letting this go on? How are we intercepting in Delaware Bay and the Chesapeake Bay? How are we intercepting giant, fecund, egg full, you know, full of eggs, giant, the oldest and the best female striped bass? Why are we netting them and selling them? If we're having a problem with spawning and we're looking at these revised numbers, and it's insane. I mean, it is the definition of insanity, how we are operating this fishery and across all sectors.
Yeah, and a big piece of this insanity that we haven't touched on is, I love Mario's pendulum analogy here, where the number of fish out there has to balance with removals. So we know release mortality, there are far fewer removals than previously assumed. And now with MRIP, we know there's even less removals from what they assumed. And on the other side of the pendulum, that means that the total number of fish out there in the ocean has to come down. So maybe Mario can articulate that better than me right now, but not only that's just another layer that hasn't been added to that yet, where if the entire population comes down, then we're removing a higher part of the population, or we're removing more of the population.
Not to mention there's a whole economic side of this, so we don't even have the time to put in, but if the directed trips is even lower than we thought, then any or all economic research that goes into how much money, the economic impact, spending, jobs and sales and everything related to trips and participation, all that is even lower. So actually all the managers, one of the little medals they can take, their little 5K medal we can put around their neck, is actually you have plummeted the economic impact of this fishery significantly more than we thought. You've actually, you know, to a major detriment of coastal economies from Maine to North Carolina to the scales of, you know, millions of dollars, I'm sure, less. I don't have those exact numbers on me, but just knowing that the directed trips is even less means that the, you know, value and economic impact based on participation and directed trips, not necessarily cost per fish, is even lower. So another nice little medal to hang around your neck for all the losers have known exactly what they're doing. And now we get a nice look into, now we at least have the data to show the public what these people have known while they've been acting so inappropriately.
Can you, Jay, can you ask that question again?
Yeah, I was trying to get across the pendulum analogy, which maybe Cody can cut that if I was just speaking in tongues. But the on one side of the pendulum, we have the spawning stock biomass and the population of fish. And on the other side, we have removals. So I was just trying to make the point that this is another big reduction from one side of the pendulum. And that means that the SSB is going to come down and the population is going to come down. And when you stack this on top of release mortality, that influences how the stock assessment tries to balance both sides of the pendulum.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously, as you guys know, there's a ton that goes into, you know, assessing the population and trying to get the best inference and estimates that, you know, suggest what the spawning stock biomass is and looking at the juvenile abundance indices to, you know, better understand recruitment and all of these different facets. But one thing that we do know is that, like you're talking about here, Jake, is that the revisions that we are discussing here will have impacts. They'll have significant impacts on our understanding and prior assumptions of the physical population itself. So it is very realistic to assume that the future assessment of the physical population could be different and potentially drastically different than what has been previously assumed. And that's another thing where I know, like, catch per unit effort, CPUE, has been discussed in some of these meetings where they're like, oh, CPUE is going down and, you know, that could suggest some things. And kind of a note to that is things could be far worse than what that CPUE is actually suggesting. Because like I mentioned, kind of with the analogy and with the, you know, the commercial fishery still catching decent amounts of fish in the Chesapeake compared to the coastwide decline, you know, CPUE is one of those things where it's never a good thing to look at alone, because your CPUE could remain kind of relatively stable or decline slowly while that population is drastically shrinking, right? So if you're looking at CPUE alone, you're like, the CPUE could reflect that people are still catching, you know, that available part of the population, while the vast, you know, general population itself is shrinking rapidly. So all that I'm trying to say here is that there's indicators that the population is shrinking and that it's declining. Recruitment's obviously been down, spawning's been down, so spawning success has been down. So with this updated data, I mean, there's, and then the fact that they're looking at using the WAM, there's no telling what's going to be, you know, what's going to be said and, you know, what the future assessments are going to say. But,
well, I mean, it's a lot to chew on, boys. And I'm going to say one thing, we'll close this out. It's not like we were chomping at the bit to get this and like point a finger and blame it all on the commercial sector. That wasn't the goal, right? Our goal will and is and will always be to recover striped bass to their greatness. Okay, that's always been our goal, and it'll never change. But I think the reason why these numbers are so jaw dropping is it kind of tells us what we knew all along, that, you know, we are over here. There are massive segments of our sector that are absolutely trying to do the best that they can every day when they release these fish. And we know that because they are very receptive to science hook configuration. Like I mentioned before, you know, we can talk to lure manufacturers that have changed what they do and completely changed the makeup of their lures to be more compliant with the MassDMF study, and they're flying off, well, they were flying off the shelves when they were selling striper lures. Nothing's flying off the shelves now. But it was wholly adopted by the public, and it was actually encouraged, and people were happy about, you know, having that option where they didn't have to modify their lures. They could get one out of the box. And I'm saying all this because you have one sector that is receptive, deeply concerned, the whole enchilada. And when this comes out and this hits the fan and they see what's coming, you're going to have another sector that wholly rejects anything and everything that they see here. And, you know, what I would say to them is, like, take some accountability for what you've done. Take some accountability for what you've done. Like, for example, the 4,500 permits that are handed out by MassDMF and only 1,500 people report fish. The 400,000 missing tags. The stripers appearing without tags in them in restaurants all over New York. The fact that, you know, the Potomac River is basically the wild, wild west. The fact is, you know, that when big fish are put onto trucks in Virginia Beach that are headed for New York or New Jersey, they basically don't even count those fish. They don't even know what's going on. That's part of the, you know, 400,000 missing tags. And we have been quiet for a very long time. Again, fix our own house. And now we have this information. And now the message is fix striped bass. Now the message is, we know, fix striped bass. And where that is what we were demanding. And the other thing that I would just say is, like, boy, you guys were close. There were days where I didn't sleep. If that makes you giggle or laugh with those no targeting closures. You guys were so close. You thought you had it. You were just patting each other on the back at those ASMFC happy hours, weren't you? Weren't you? You think you had us circled up. Well, we beat you back then. And now, with this information, it's a brave new world. So we know that you're going to look at it and try to twist things up and say your stupid little stuff at the Striped Bass Management Board. But we're going to hold you accountable now. We're going to figure out a way to hold you accountable for what you've done to this fishery, what you knew before, you know, we were able to see these numbers, and what you tried to do to us. We do not forgive. We do not forget.
I got a quote, Tony. I want to end with a quote. You and I were just discussing this quote for the managers and lobbyists and representatives and anyone.
You're going to make me teary-eyed. You can't clip this or I'm going off video because I'm going to get choked up. When you do this quote, it gets me choked up. So I'm going to put myself on mute.
So this one is to all the managers, commercial apologists, anyone who knew what was going on, but continued to manage or represent in a way that was only for wanton and waste. Defenders of the short-sighted men who, in their greed and selfishness, will, if permitted, rob our country, sometimes seek to champion them by saying the game belongs to the people. So it does, and not merely to the people now alive, but to the unborn people. Theodore Roosevelt, 1916.
And I think that's pretty profound, because you're going to be a dad in about 2 weeks.
I was going to say, don't underestimate me right now. Don't say like 2 days. No, give me at least another 10 days or so.
Mario's a dad. I'm a dad.
All you scumbags you stole from the next generation, get ready, motherfucker, because karma's coming.